Hey, I got my son here. Yes. Here, you want to play with my phone? You want to play cards?
No. Daddy, what's your password?
That's not my computer. That's Jeff's computer. Don't play with Jeff's computer.
Valuable information on there.
Yes. Here, no, Maxie. Here, take that, Jeff. You can play with my phone.
Okay, Elliot Friedman, a little preview for Free Agent Day, and a reminder as always, and a thank you to our friends at GMC. 31 Thoughts brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali. I'm going to run through a couple of topics and issues that are going on in the NHL right now, hoping to get this out as soon as possible because things are changing and moves are happening really quick. So the latest one, I guess the latest one is the Eric Halla trade, but the bigger one right now, Elliot, is the Roberto Luongo situation. He retires after 19 seasons in the NHL. I want to pause on what this means for Luongo and the Florida Panthers, but for the Vancouver Canucks, this means $3 million a season in cap recapture. How surprised, how pissed off are Vancouver?
I think they were aware that this was coming. There were rumors around the draft last weekend that quite possibly Luongo would retire rather than go on long-term injury list. I'm sure Florida is much happier for cash outlay that Luongo is doing that. I wonder if there's going to be like down the road, he's hired by the Panthers to do something locally. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of like a, I don't know if nudge, nudge, wink, wink is the right word, but whatever he's given up, he'll work for the organization and they'll pay him down the road to be a local ambassador. I mean, who would be better for them in that area than Luongo?
Sure.
But I heard last weekend there was a possibility this was going to happen. And I think the Canucks had heard that this was a possibility it could happen. And I think they knew this would affect potentially their cap space for the next 3 years.
So you think they've been modeling based on the new number that they have, which is $3 million less than everybody else.
Right. I think they were aware the possibility of that existed. Yes.
That would affect a potential signing of Tyler Myers. It seems as if those two are walking down the aisle.
The thing is that was really crazy was there were people that said to me that Myers was most likely going to Vancouver and nothing that happened when they met on Sunday night changed all that. I think there were people saying that he was going to get 7x7. I don't think he's getting 7x7, but that's what created the hysteria. I think the Canucks knew all the time that they were probably going to be doing less than that because of this situation. Now, Myers might still get 6.5, something like that, but I think the Canucks knew they couldn't go that high. I mean, they still have to deal with Besser. And I'm guessing if that has any term to it at all, like 6 years, that's going to be 7.5. So I still think it's likely that Tyler Myers will be a Canuck, but I don't think it's going to be for $7 million a season. If I think it's going to cost Vancouver anywhere, mm-hmm. It might be the next person they were thinking about beyond Besser and Myers.
Which leads into the next part of the conversation, and we will get back to Luongo here in a second, which is where are the Vancouver Canucks at right now? There is a feeling out there that, listen, the St. Louis Blues just won the Stanley Cup. Things can turn around quickly in the NHL with a lot of teams. We know the owner wants the full court press on making the playoffs, and the general manager seems to be behaving as if he is going to follow those marching orders, CJT Miller coming in, acquisition of someone like Tyler Myers. We'll see what happens on July 1st. Where is the Vancouver Canucks organization at right now? We've seen a couple of big moves. The Miller move, they re-signed Edler on the 2 years. There's the Luongo situation with the cap recapture. But where's Vancouver at right now? Because we've pointed out numerous times that the presence and the production of Pettersson changed everything. And right now they have one of the best luxuries in the NHL, and that's that guy on an entry-level deal.
They're at least going to try to compete for a playoff spot next year and seriously compete. You know, they've put themselves in a position where they have no choice but to do it. That JT Miller draft pick is going to be a first rounder either next year or the year after. Yep. So the idea of not at least competing for a playoff spot, that's out of the question. Now they have to do it with a bit less money than they hoped. You know, that's for sure. I wondered if they were going to go after Gardner. I thought when they got Edler re-signed, that was a no. Then they lost Hutton, and they could still re-sign Hutton, but I'm not convinced he's going there. I think he knows how the organization feels about him. He's not worth that price point. He may end up somewhere else. Like, there were a lot of rumblings in the hours before the qualifying offer deadline that Hutton and the Canucks and the Leafs were talking about something. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're going to be able to afford to get Gardner, though. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Jordy Benn or something like that, because without Hutton there, they're thin on the left side behind Edler. But they're in a position where they know they're going to be $3 million short, and that's going to make it a little tight on some of the things they want to do.
Vancouver Canucks, as we all know, of course, hosted the draft this past weekend. Why don't you give you a quick thought on drafting Vasily Podkolzin?
Yep.
Because you've talked about him before, and you made the suggestion that it might be one of those teams that's taking a long view because he's married to the KHL for a couple of seasons. He's St. Petersburg. Don't expect him anytime soon. Your thoughts on Vancouver taking Podkolzin?
Well, initially when they first took him, I was surprised because it doesn't fit what I had talked about. But Jim Benning made a really good point. He said that anybody they would have drafted at 10 was 2 years away anyway, so why not go for the best available player? Like, whether or not Jim Benning is the GM in Vancouver or not long term, I have a feeling that drafting that player, he's going to be remembered fondly for that pick. I think that guy, and you know better than I do because you follow these guys more than I do, he's a really talented player. I thought it was
top five skill.
I think that, you know, like I said, whether he's there or not a long time, I think he did a really good legacy pick for the organization. I had some Canuck fans who came up to me after the draft and they said, well, you know, Trampkin left, so why would this guy want to come to us? And I think they're different situations. I don't think they're comparable. I think most of the good young Russian players, they want to play in North America. They want to try. And I think he will. You know, I think Kaprizov is going to come over to Minnesota after this year. There's another Zaitsev, and the one who played in Red Deer. I think he's going back to Russia for 3 years. But I think some NHL teams are going to try to see if they can get him signed as a free agent in the window you're allowed to do it.
We're going to get to one of those Russian players who's very much staying and very much going to be rich sooner than later, and that's Panarin. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the salary cap itself.
Yep.
A lot of eyebrows raised at 81.5. Is there anything behind that number?
Keep escrow low. I'll tell you a story. Years ago, and I've promised the players, the two players involved confirmed it for me as long as I would never reveal their names.
Okay.
There was an NHL team. And this is going back at least a decade, I think, where a team was having a vote in its dressing room about the escrow. And this was at a time when the players generally were bumping it up a full 5% every year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the players was tired about, and he was a star. And one of the players was tired of paying the full 5%. And he's like, guys, this year I want to do less than the full 5%. I'm losing too much money. I don't like it. And I think we should dial it back. And another player, and it was a prominent player. He was not as good a player as the first guy who said it, but he was a good player. Mm-hmm. He jumped up and he yelled and he said, oh, okay. And this guy was going to be a free agent that summer. So the player jumped up and he said, okay, so when you were a free agent, I voted to give the max cap available that you could have. And now that I'm a free agent, you're going to vote differently. And it turned into a bit of a verbal battle. But then, to his credit, the superstar player said, you know what? You're right. I'll do it. You did it for me. I'll do it for you. But that's what it does. It creates some division. And this year, I know there were some free agents, either restricted or unrestricted, who were unhappy. But the group as a whole is getting fed up with this. I think the two sides are quietly moving towards getting the CBA either extended or changed so that there will be labor peace.
We do know that they are meeting this summer.
They are meeting and they have met, and there is a quiet sense of optimism is what I keep getting told. And the salary cap, what happened this year, is part of that. But Jeff, 80% of the players in our contract, if they all decide to vote and say, no, it's stopped, then that's what's going to happen. And I'll tell you this, like, there are a couple of owners who told their GMs, the GMs were a little bit upset, and there were a couple of owners who looked at them and said, look, if I was a businessman, I would do the same thing the players are. It makes sense for them. And I think that's kind of where we are. I think we're in a situation where this is what people want, and I think we're going to see it next summer. I think teams are under the impression the same thing is going to happen next year, a very minimal increase, and then the US TV deal kicks in two summers. And they'll sort it out then.
So should we be optimistic to the point where we look at this number and what may happen next year with the cap and say, this is addressing the biggest need in the next CBA because there's not a lockout issue. And if there is a strike issue, it's escrow. This is addressing it.
I don't think the players are going to vote to open it. I just don't think they have that in them.
But I'm saying, like, their main issue is escrow.
Yes.
Does the flat cap this year and potentially next year address that? And should we read into it then we are close to a deal and labor management peace?
I would never say we're close to a deal, but I think we're on the path. I think there is an optimism there that it will get done. From what I've been told, the league submitted a bunch of different scenarios to the players. This is where we see the cap going in the next couple of few years. If you want the escrow at zero, if you want the escrow at 5 or 6%, this is what we think that is happening, the new US TV deal 2 years from now, mm-hmm. all that stuff. And I heard there were like 5 or 6 different scenarios, and all of them took a bump after the 2020-2021 season, like when Seattle's about to come in.
Right.
I heard that all of that was part of it. And like I said, I think history tells us, Jeff, that you can't assume anything until it's done. But I think that the players feel that the league will work with them on a deal to ease the escrow. But the moment you start opening up to too many more things than that, that's when you're going to have a problem. I think they want Olympics and escrow. Olympics, I think, is a harder sell. Mm-hmm. But I just think players don't want to fight. It's a good deal for the owners. They know it. And the only way I think this ends in any kind of stoppage is if it really goes off the rails for a stupid reason.
Okay, from CBA talk to more of a dinner bell topic.
Okay.
Let's just call it for the purposes of this podcast. RFAs. We've talked about them all season long, and we've talked about offer sheets. Which out of all of them, and we've all gone over the headline makers, which one is the most interesting case to you?
Well, I mean, Marner's the one that's been kind of in the spotlight. But let's take him out of the equation because I think people are kind of...
I think people are Marnered out.
Yeah, they're Marnered out. Point to me is interesting because he is the guy who sounds most like he doesn't want the fight. Point seems to be the most agreeable player, but I don't think he wants to be Kucherov like Nikita was. Yeah. I think he's looking at something a little bit more than that. I think Laine is interesting because he seems to be the one that wants the bridge. A lot of these guys don't want the bridge. He wants the bridge. And, you know, I think he can get it. Besser's not eligible for an offer sheet.
Matthew Tkachuk.
Tkachuk is interesting because he's represented by Newport. They have signed their clients some killer deals.
Yes.
Carlson, Skinner. I don't think Calgary wants to pick a fight with him, and they also have to sign Riddick, who is a Newport client. I think Calgary recognizes his value, and I think they want him. But to me, the most interesting thing is who's going first, Jeff? Who's going to be the one that goes first? Because I think there's a fear of being first, of setting a market that gets you criticized by either other teams or by other restricted free agents. See, this is my theory now on the Maple Leafs and Marner. I think the Leafs are going to offer him like 2x8. And I think they're going to say, we all believe the cap's going up in 2 years. Why don't you sign then when we have more room and the maximum is higher? Laine is going to do that because I think he was unhappy. He was unhappy with the way last year finished. He's almost going to send the Jets like a warning, like, I wasn't happy here, and how are we all going to fix this? And he has to take some of the responsibility for that. He wasn't as good as he could be, but I think also, like, you know, that's a team where the leadership expects an extremely high standard, and I think some of the young players have chafed under that a bit. I think you can sort that out over term. I really do. But I think those guys are all going to have to work together. I actually think it's going to be a good thing for Winnipeg in the long run that that happens. I could see Toronto going to Marner and saying, do you want 2x8? And then we'll see where the cap is in 2 years and we can all figure this out again.
See, I'm curious about a couple of things. One, who's going to be first to set the marketplace? I'm also curious to see who drags on. And if there's another Nylander situation, someone drags on past training camp and into the regular season. And I'm also talking about Sebastian Aho on Hockey Central at noon today.
Yep.
I'm curious to see what the number is for Aho. And if there is an offer sheet, and listen, we all understand Carolina Hurricanes, Tom Dundon, and the Carolina market, is there a number and is it considered low at which Carolina would walk away and say, we'll just take the picks? Let me throw this in here. If he gets offer sheeted at, let's just say, $9 million, would Carolina match or take the picks?
Well, I know there were some people, yes, I saw that in my, I don't check my Twitter replies that often, but I saw it yesterday. There were some people who are Hurricanes fans who didn't like what I wrote about Aho yesterday, where Dundon just says, hey, it's this or, and this is as far as I'm going. You know, one of the interesting things about Tom Dundon is he's unlike most other NHL owners. I think a lot of those other NHL owners feel pressure about, you know, we've got to do this to bend to our market. Dundon doesn't seem like that. He puts a value on everything, and he says, this is the value, and we're not going past it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he put a $3.7 million value or $3.8 million value on that first round pick for Patrick Marleau, and he did it. And I was like, wow, he just bought a pick for $3.8 million, which I got no problem with. But then they made the move on the other side with DeHaan, and now they just traded for Holla. But he has finite limits on what he will do. Like, there are owners out there who look at the coaching salaries and the executive salaries, and one of them said to me, actually, I wish I had the cojones that Dundon does to say, that's not happening here. Like, I'm not doing that here. So my point is that Tom Dundon places a value on everything. And I know that Aho is a great player, and I know he's your franchise player, but I think there's a limit on what he's willing to do. Like, one agent said it great to me. They said, okay, you got to go through the teams. Who's got the cap room to do it? Who's got the picks to do it? Who's got the will to do it? There aren't a lot of teams.
But everybody has the picks. To me, the biggest one is, do you have the guts to do it?
Yeah, and, you know, I think we're all wondering about kind of the Islanders. You know, somebody said to me they could see Buffalo doing it. That's a team that when you look at Skinner's deal, like that's a team that feels desperation to get better fast.
Mm-hmm.
That made a lot of sense to me. And, you know, Larry Brooks, who writes for the Post, and he's really plugged in on the Rangers, he says the Rangers aren't going to do offer sheets. Now, assuming that's correct, and I've got no reason to feel that he's wrong, then I would put the Rangers in there normally, but I won't. I will tell you this. I've had some people who think that Carolina and Aho, it's higher than 8x6. Like, the team has an offer there that's higher than that. So we'll see where it goes.
Kyle Connor? He doesn't get talked about.
He doesn't get talked enough. He's a 30-goal scorer.
I know.
And he doesn't exactly play like the area of the power play where you get all the one-timers and stuff. What I've heard is that everybody's checking in with these RFAs. And the reason is they want to know what they want in case they trade for them.
Okay, it's been a story all season long, mainly attached to Columbus, but now the market is open. The door is open. Walk through, gentlemen. Artemi Panarin, Sergei Bobrovsky, what is the latest?
Well, I think everybody thinks Bobrovsky's going to Florida, right? Like, the belief is that when Joel Quenneville went to Florida, he was told, we're going to solve our goaltending problem. And, you know, Luongo being gone helps that. Look, he would have been on the cap for whatever, or LTIR for whatever. But now he's cost them $1 million apiece the next 3 years. I got to think Bobrovsky is going there. I think that the contract will be interesting because the team across state has to sign Vasilevsky, who will be an unrestricted free agent next summer.
Yep.
And if Bobrovsky gets 10, you know that I don't think Vasilevsky will go to 10, but he'll be close. Panarin, there were reports his agent – now, Adrian Dater reached out to me. He said his agent met with Colorado. And other people told me that Panarin met with Colorado. Panarin specifically never met with Colorado. I think it's Islanders, Rangers, or Panthers. Now, I think if L.A. was in this, he would have seriously considered them. But as far as I know, L.A. is not in this. I think it's one of those three teams.
Matt Duchene.
I think it's Nashville with Montreal as an outside shot.
What thought on what's happening with Chris Kreider? Now, Chris Kreider is a name that we've heard available and out there, even going back to the Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine draft where there was something cooking between the Rangers and the Edmonton Oilers. What's happening with Chris Kreider?
Well, I don't know. I mean, either they're going to trade him or they're going to extend him, right? Like, I think Colorado was looking at him, but they didn't want to trade the 16 for him.
Mm-hmm.
One question I never asked at the draft, I wish I had more time to ask it is, you know, you watch what the Raptors did with Kawhi Leonard. How many teams are going to say, I'm going to take a chance with a one-year guy now? Like, Chris Kreider, if I thought I could win next year, mm-hmm. I'd be going to have that guy on my team.
What are your thoughts on the buyouts out west? Corey Perry, Dion Phaneuf.
I mean, I'm not surprised with either. Really tough year for Phaneuf. I think he needed a fresh start. And Perry was simply a money thing, no question. I've heard there's a lot of interest in Perry. Like, I think on my blog I mentioned Montreal and Pittsburgh were up there. I think both those teams have a shot. I heard Dallas was in there. I heard Nashville was in there. Like, I heard there was a lot. And the thing about Perry that's interesting, because he's over 35 and he played less than 100 days last year,
yeah.
You can bonus him. His contract can be bonus. The other guy who's the calendar really helps you with is Pavelski. Pavelski was born on July 11th, so you're not signing him to an over 35 deal.
Yeah, it just sneaks.
Yes.
Just sneaks.
Like, I've heard because of the bonuses, Perry's a pretty attractive guy.
Back to Pavelski for a couple of seconds. Just some players would look strange in a different jersey, but should we start warming ourselves to the idea that Joe Pavelski might be in a different jersey next year?
I could see San Jose still trying to do this, but I think Dallas really wants him. I don't know if Tampa can do it. I think Dallas really wants him. Now, I've heard he's going to take one more visit, and it's close to home, and northwest of his summer home is Minnesota, and southeast of his summer home is Chicago. Now, I had heard that he turned down a couple of visits with teams he didn't think could win, mm-hmm. So my guess is if he's going to one of those two places, it's Chicago, unless he's considering St. Louis. You know, he said that he is considering team. He told one team I know of, you know, thanks for your interest, but you're just not close enough to winning.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to think Dallas is pretty high up on that list.
You know, one of the teams that I'm really curious about this offseason, because they have space, they have prospects coming. They just landed Bowen Byram, fourth overall, Alex Newhook as well in the draft. Joe Sakic had a really nice first round. I'm curious to see what Colorado does this offseason.
Me too.
In the playoffs a couple of years in a row. Of course, they have Mikko Rantanen to sign as an RFA, but they have space. They have some momentum there as well. I wonder if a player like Wayne Simmonds fits there with the Avalanche. Where are you at with Colorado?
Well, I really thought that that was where Pavelski was going to end up. And Pavelski saw them up close, right? Like, he watched a set as much as he could play or see because he was hurt. He saw how good Colorado was. I have heard Colorado's biggest issue is, yes, they have a ton of cap room now, but look who's coming up in the next 4 years. You've got Rantanen now, and I'm under the impression he's asked for a very big number. You know, I think they've got Rantanen now. If you want to keep Tyson Barrie, you know, you've got him in a year. And then Landeskog's up in 2 years. Grubauer's up in 2 years. Kale McCarr's up in 2 years. And then McKinnon's up in 4 years, which is a bit more breathing room. So I think they're really worried of term. And so I don't know if they felt they could do Pavelski for 3 or 4 years. Like, I think San Jose might be willing to go 3 years on Pavelski, but, you know, I think he wants the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's what Colorado wanted to do. So I think they're going to look at guys without term and see if they can do it that way. Like, I wonder if a guy like Ferland ends up there.
I get the sense that they want to get tougher.
Yes.
And that's why I throw the name Wayne Simmonds
I wonder in there. If Wayne Simmonds is 4 and 5 year offers out there from what I heard. I think Minnesota's going after him. Like, I wonder if Wayne Simmonds is another guy, like a team like Colorado says, you know, we're not going to give you term, but we'll give you a bigger number in a short time.
Hall of Fame class, 2019, headlined by Haley Wickenheiser, Sergei Zubov, we've talked about here on the podcast. I know that was a big one for you for a number of years. Guy Carboneau, Veslav Nedimansky, Jim Rutherford, and Jerry York. A thought on the class going in 2019.
Well, you know, there's always arguments about this stuff, and that's fine. I mean, nobody's going to have a problem with Wickenheiser. I certainly don't have a problem with Zubov. Carboneau, I have to tell you, the first thing I did when I saw Carboneau was in is I looked to see if Bob Clark was still on the selectors list. And he is.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Clark, I saw interviews. He'd be asked, who is the guy who's not in the Hall of Fame that should be there? He would always say Guy Carboneau. I remember, Jeff, when I interviewed him at the 2010 Stanley Cup Final, I said to him, do you still feel that way? He says, absolutely. He was an elite defensive player in an offensive era, a guy who was a key part of Canadian Stanley Cups. So I would not be convinced if Clark went in there and said, Guy Carboneau, and they all ran away from him. And I don't really have a problem with it, to be honest. I don't. I think that side of the game gets overlooked. Vaclav Nedermansky, I was watching when they announced it, and I was like, is this Vaclav Nedermansky? And I was like, holy smokes. Well, first of all, his son, who now goes by Vashi, but his name back then was Vasek. We went to grade school together.
I saw that in your blog.
And I remember him, and I looked him up. I Googled Vasek Nedermansky, and it came up Vashi, but I realized it all lined up. And I saw he followed me on Twitter, so I sent him a DM, and he didn't remember me at all.
Why would he follow you?
I guess he's still interested in hockey. But he didn't remember us being in a class together at all. But I told him, I said, like, did you go to Bayview Glen? He goes, it's so wild, because that's where he learned to speak English and French. And I'm pretty sure, I forgot to double check with him, but, you know, what the heck, what facts are facts. I believe that when his dad left, moved with the Toros to Birmingham, they stayed in Toronto. Like the family stayed in Toronto. And Vaclav went to Birmingham, and then he went to Detroit when there was that weird WHA-NHL trade. He was traded to the Detroit Red Wings. But there's a lot of talk about McGillney. I guess we'll never know this, and I think McGillney will and should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame someday. But I wonder if people looked at McGillney's story and they said, man, this was the original defector. And Vaclav Nedermansky, he had a hell of a resume. I was really happy to see that.
And so, hang on, so that would have been, you mentioned Bob Clark, you know, would stump for Carboneau. Would that be Igor Larionov? You might suspect
maybe
would stump for Nedermansky.
I could
just throw
in
darts.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think about it, but I could certainly see it. Jerry York, I don't know Jerry York that well. I mean, he's certainly deserving. I don't have any problem with that. I'm going to talk about Jim Rutherford someday when he retires.
Well, he's going in with a teammate. Because they were teammates in Detroit.
Yes,
and Rutherford
right.
and Vachon were the goaltending tandem.
Yeah.
Ned was the leading scorer for that squad. Quick thought on Zuboff, since you've talked – every time I talk to you about the Hall of Fame, oh, it's an outrage.
I don't know
Sergei
if I said
Zuboff.
I just think he was a great player, an unheralded great player. Two Stanley Cups, never won a Norris, didn't say a lot. I just always thought he was a great player. I loved watching him play.
Look at points per game.
Yeah.
Points per game, he's in a company with – Lidstrom's just above him. Maybe Rob Blake and Pronger is below him, but he's right in that. Paul Coffey's number one with a bullet, but right in that mix of Lidstrom and Pronger and Blake is Sergei Zuboff.
Great player.
Great player. July 1st, free agent day. It is signing season on Sportsnet. Our coverage gets underway at 11 o'clock Eastern. What should we expect and what are you looking forward to, Friege, when I see you again?
Well, I think it's going to be one of those things when officially at noon Eastern you are allowed to announce it. I think there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going to come flying in.
If you like the way this podcast sounds in your ears, Emil Delich is the person. He sources and finds all the music and makes the deals with the people to bring it to you. So we will take you out with this. This is a singer-songwriter from British Columbia, Jordan Klassen, with his new single, Virtuous Circle. You might want to check out the video as well. It is very powerful. Again, our signing season, free agent day, July 1st on Sportsnet, 11 o'clock Eastern is when we kick off. We hope you can join us.
I fill my pockets with delight. An overflow of words and flashing lights. And every